Welcome to the AquariMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 61, recorded May 9th, 2011. Hello!
Greetings all. We have some news.
We do. Some of the news you might be able to hear already as we speak.
Yes, we have a new microphone.
So, let us know how it sounds during this episode, if you like it better than the old microphones, or if you think it stinks compared to the old microphones, or if you can't tell a difference.
Or if you maintain a strict policy of neutrality for political reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. We just want to know if we have to bring this back to the shop or not. That's the bottom line, folks. So let us know if it's helping or if you'd rather not.
If it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to talk about something very fun first.
Yes. We've got another video on YouTube. Check it out.
It's actually very funny.
It is. We've shown it to non-aquarium enthusiasts who thought it was very funny.
They laughed a lot.
They cried. It was much better than certain Broadway musical productions that I won't mention.
That star felines?
Yes.
Yes.
There you go.
So, we'll give you a little bit of a hint of what's in it.
Yes. Okay, imagine shrimp from Hawaii.
They're Hawaiian shrimp.
Imagine surf music. Imagine the shrimp surfing. I'm not going to tell you anymore. Just go check it out.
Go watch it and let us know what you think.
Go to AquariMax's YouTube channel, or if you're subscribed, then you don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm. And if you just want to search for the video, you can search for the Opaeula, O-P-A-E, apostrophe U-L-A, and bubble surfing, and it should come up. And then you will have found us, and you can subscribe to us on YouTube, because we know you want to.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, now, our next little item of business, I'm afraid, is a bit more shocking than shrimp bubble surfing.
It is indeed.
If there are small children in the area, you may want to send them out of the room.
Or at least plug their ears.
Because we've all heard people talking about the state of youth today.
And babies having babies.
All these messages from the media of promiscuity and scary stuff, and this week, it hit home in our very own fish tank.
Yes, our neon dwarf rainbow fish, some of the male fish in there, were flashing the female fish. But no, that sounds bad. the flashing just means in rainbow fish that the male quickly and very suddenly changes color of part of his body to attract the females. And one of the fry, which was only about an inch and a quarter long, was doing that. His entire rostrum, which is his facial area, was flashing yellow to attract the females.
He's 3 months old?
Maybe 3 months old.
Oh my goodness!
So,
shocking.
There you go. In fact, we made a mention of that on the AquariMax Facebook page, and Carlos in New York mentioned that he's had betas spawning at 11 weeks old, which is, that's less than 3 months old. Mm-hmm. That's pretty young, too. So, it's a pervasive phenomenon, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway.
There's trouble right here in Riverside City.
Yep, there you go.
What would you say, Riverside Fish Tank?
Riverine Aquatic Environment? I don't know. Okay.
Okay, we have an email from Connie B., and she says she just found us and found out about the Everclean Aqua Filter from us. She says, I keep a 90-gallon with fancy goldfish and am very interested in this filter, and I'm wondering how it's doing since January. So,
okay, well, thanks for finding us, Connie. And
welcome.
We'll tell you a little bit about how the filter's doing. There are the caveats we mentioned before. One more recently, it did start having a slow leak where the water enters the filter box at the joint, and I was able to correct for it temporarily by leaning the filter box a little bit forward, and that it ends up dripping into the tank instead of dripping down the back of the tank, which it was starting to do. And I communicated with Joe at Everclean Aqua about it, and he said, A couple of things. One, he said I could use the O-ring from the other side of the filter box and move it over, because the O-ring may be part of the problem that's causing that. And he said that they're also moving up, they're upgrading to an integrated filter aquarium combination. It's a whole structure that's the stand, the aquarium, the filter, everything's all built in. It looks pretty
slick.
And
not just like, oh, it all comes together. It's like one piece more, isn't it?
Well, almost, yeah. And it looks really cool. He has some mock-ups, I guess you'd call them, on the website. So if you go to evercleanaqua.com, you can check them out. So there you go. A couple of things about the Everclean Aqua system.
Okay, our next email is from Vladimir in Virginia. He's just got vinegar eels, and he says, at this moment I do not have apples. Can I substitute apple with some other vegetable matter, such as raw squash or potato?
Okay, Vladimir, I don't know for sure if raw squash or potato would work, but I would tend to avoid them for a couple of reasons. One is that the pH and the sugar balance could be quite different, as well as other nutritional issues in those vegetables that might cause problems. You want a pretty acidic environment in the vinegar eel ecosystem, as it were. But the good news is the worms will do fine for several weeks without apples, as long as you have some vinegar in there. They'll breed and everything in there for some time, so you can easily wait until the next time you have a chance to go buy an apple. It's not going to be an issue. One thing, though, you mentioned you had the water and vinegar mix, and that is fine, although it's best if the vinegar is mixed with distilled or RO water, something like that, if you're going to mix it with water. You can also use it straight, but if it's water that contains a lot of dissolved minerals, that can be a problem. So, just so you know. Apples, distilled water, vinegar, you're set. Vinegar eels are cast iron source of live food. They're hard to kill. You can keep them going for months on almost no maintenance, so good luck with those.
Okay. We have a Google Voice message from Andreka in Oregon. So, hi, Andreka. It's nice to hear from you again. So, let's go listen to that.
All right.
Hi, Russ and Kelly. This is Andreka calling with another set of questions. Thanks for your show. And my latest idea is, what are the common, like the top 10 common crises that can occur with having an aquarium? For instance, we accidentally nudged our the outlet that connected the heater plug to the outlet, and for a couple of days the fish were without heat. And I'm just wondering, what are the common mistakes that the fish care folks might make, and what do you do? Ours seem to have recovered, which is great. But we were wondering, you know, would you want to rapidly raise the heat, or probably not rapidly. Anyway, so that was just an idea I have. Like, what should we look out for, just to make sure we don't accidentally harm our little fishy friends. So, anyways, thanks for your show. Bye bye.
All right. Well, thanks, Andreka, for that idea. That's a good one for us to talk about. I guess we've talked a little bit about disasters, aquarium disasters, before, haven't we? But not quite in this same vein. So we'll look at that a little bit differently this time as we address your question.
Okay. So, number one, things that you want to look for is you want to make sure everything's plugged in and in working order. The monitor to the temperature, the water flow.
It seems kind of intuitive, but just checking the temperature on the tank, every time you look at the tank, look at the thermometer and see where it is. Mm-hmm. And that'll give you an idea if the heater's working or not. Also look at the filter. Make sure that the water flow is coming out of the right part of the filter. You know, a lot of the hang-on-the-back filters, water can come out of two parts. One is the weir, I guess it's, I'm not sure if it's pronounced that way, but the area, the waterfall part, as some people refer to it. And it can also come out of the area that's immediately surrounding the intake tube. And if it's coming out the intake tube area mostly, that means you have some obstruction. And so your water is not really being filtered all that effectively because it's mostly just flowing out that area. So you need to address your filter media, unclog it or replace it or, you know, rinse it out, something like that. And not doing that can lead to some big problems. I once had some dye out in a tank. It was kind of massive and suddenly rather unexpected because I couldn't see the filter box where it was. The tank was up too high and I failed to check it as I should have anyway, and the filter was somewhat obstructed. So avoid that problem just by checking on the filter flow. Now, that when we're talking about things being plugged in, as you noticed with your heater, what's the best way to deal with the problem if you have had a power outage or you found out that something has been unplugged? Depends on the time. That depends on the time that has been unplugged. If it's a couple of hours, for example, it's usually okay. If it's more than that, you might have an issue. And it also depends on what's unplugged. If the heater's been unplugged for a couple of hours, don't worry. Just plug it back in. It's going to be fine. The water is not going, unless it's a really small tank, or there's a really big temperature differential between your house and your tank, a couple of hours is not going to make a difference. And even if there is a big temperature differential between your house and your tank, we had a power outage. How long did that one last, that recent one?
Oh, gosh. It was mostly...
It was about 24 hours.
It was almost overnight.
Wasn't it? It was a long time anyway.
I remember.
It was too long.
It all ran together.
And our house got pretty cold.
Yeah, it did.
It was the winter, and it gets cold here in the winter. So... some of the tanks got down into the 60s. Not good
just
for
like
a lot of
house.
I mean, goldfish didn't care, but some of the other fish did. But we didn't lose any fish.
No, that's true.
At
we
all.
Didn't.
I don't think the 55 even lost that much heat because, you know, that much latent heat capacity in a 55-gallon tank, it takes a while to get cold. But we didn't lose anything. It's, as you mentioned, Andreika, it's not really a good idea to try to heat the water rapidly. Just turn the equipment back on and let things happen slowly, and the fish will be happier. If it's a filter issue, what I would do if my filters kicked out for more than a couple of hours is I would add something like M-Quil or Prime, something that reduces ammonia toxicity. That's generally what I do if I have, you know, a power outage or something.
That will
like
have
that.
Built up a bit more with the filter off?
Right, it will have built up, and the bacteria that usually take care of ammonia, a lot of them may have died in the time it takes for, you know, the filter during the outage or the unpluggedness or whatever. They
I
may
like
have died.
That word. That's
unpluggedness.
Unpluggedness.
I just invented that.
We could just call up a certain music video channel and say you should just call it unpluggedness now.
There you go. Unpluggedness.com. There you go. But based on that, if it's been more than a couple of hours, I would add some of that because you're going to have some at least some stress bacteria, and some ammonia spikes are possible, and so that can help reduce that problem. Planted tanks often do a lot better in such outages than non-planted tanks, especially heavily planted tanks, because the fish, I mean the plants, even if there's not a lot of light, they can still absorb ammonium, and then later when they get back, you know, the light and things they need like that, they can metabolize it, but they can still absorb it to some extent, even if they're not actively photosynthesizing, so that's nice. Another thing you can do is a battery-powered air pump as kind of a backup, or a non-interruptible power supply. You can plug your tank into one of those. I'm not officially saying that because some of them say you shouldn't use them near aquariums, so don't take that as my official word, but some people do recognize that as a possible resource, the ones that are sold for computers. But do keep it away from any water or anything like that.
Well, they've got a long enough cord, you could still have it scooted away anyways.
Yeah. Oh, that brings me to another idea. There's two, really, that I should mention.
Perhaps you should wait to mention them until after our break, because it is coming up.
Oh, well, no, look, we've got, like, almost a minute. We've got a good 30
oh,
seconds
no,
before
don't.
The break.
It's, like, right there, so
oh, yeah.
We've got...
That's true.
Like...
Look
five
how long
seconds.
I'm spending. Sorry, I totally messed
I
that up.
I just figured it'd be better than interrupting
no,
you in the
you're right.
Sense.
You're right.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
Okay, now you can say your two things.
Okay, so after a power outage, it is very common for people to miss this. The impeller, which is the little structure inside many types of filters that spins, it's got a magnet on it, and it reacts with the electromagnetic in the filter housing itself to spin. It's like a little propeller, but not quite the same as a propeller, but it's an impeller. And it is what causes the water to be pulled up through the intake tube. After a power outage, it's not uncommon for them to freeze, which heats up inside the filter, but worse than that, it just sits there and doesn't do anything, doesn't pull the water up. So after any sort of power outage or after the filter has been unplugged, make sure that your impeller is spinning. If it's not spinning, there are a couple of things you can do. Sometimes you can just reach in there gently with your an instrument, something like that, maybe some tweezers, and just tap it lightly, and sometimes that'll set it spinning. If that doesn't work, you may have to pull it out and then reseat it as if you were putting the filter together again for the first time. That might be an issue. That might be one way to do it. So it's very important to do it at any rate. Check to make sure it's working. If not, then you need to get that going again after a power outage. After every power outage, I run around the house and check all the tanks and make sure that's
true.
Working.
True, he does.
And very often I need to restart.
Very often they're not working anymore.
Restart one of them. So think about that. And that brings us to our next point.
Number two, electrical safety.
Okay, I did touch on some electrical safety issues already in number one, but talk about a couple more. It is really kind of important to make sure that you have grounded outlets with aquarium things, considering that we're working with water, of course. And the ground fault interrupters are really good. They're those little outlets that have little buttons on them, the little black and red buttons. You can reset them and all that kind of stuff.
If it gets overloaded, it turns the current
off. Yeah. Those can be an insurance measure, so to speak, to keep things safe when you're working with water in an aquarium. So consider installing some of those or using power strips that have those built in or something like that. That can be good in terms of safety. I once had an aquarium when I was a kid that had an old metal light fixture. Scary thing. Every time I put my hand in the tank, I'd get a little shock. It wasn't a bad one.
Well, it's a little scary.
But I would get this little bzzz that I would feel, and I'm sure that was really not very safe. But I didn't really know that at the time. But just avoid problems by using things like GFIs. Also, drip loops. These are usually mentioned in with aquarium supplies. I've only had a problem with this once where I missed one. But if water, for some reason, starts dripping down the cord of something, a filter or a pump, water air pump, or a particular problem, that because if water siphons down an airlift tube from an air pump, siphons down there into the air pump itself, and then you can get a puddle of water that'll then drip down the cord right into the outlet, you've got a serious problem.
Ooh, that's a problem.
And once I did have a problem similar to that and had a power strip start smoking, and I had to unplug it and replace it. So it could have been a lot worse. Could have started a fire.
So when the water does that, that's what's called a drip loop?
No, a drip loop is something to use to avoid that. That's a good question, though. A drip loop is a loop that goes below both the aquarium appliance that's plugged in and the outlet to which it is plugged in. So if water drips down the cord and it's a loop in the cord it will drip down to that lowest point and then fairly harmlessly onto
just
the
drip
floor,
onto the
and
floor.
It can't drip uphill into the outlet.
It's like an alternate channel for the water to go down so it doesn't
right.
go into the outlet.
Before it has a chance to go
okay.
to the outlet, it'll go to a point below it
that
and drip down
sense.
Onto the floor, which isn't great, but it's a lot better than starting a fire
right.
or some other terrible thing. And then you can also install check valves to avoid back siphoning into a pump. Those are great if you're going to use an airline. Just put a check valve in there. And a check valve is a little apparatus that has a little rubber tube inside. It's usually in a plastic tube, and inside that there's a little rubber stopper. Sometimes they're spring operated, but basically air can go through one way, but it can't come back the other way. So that's also true with water. If water starts to siphon down, all it'll do is fill up the tube on the water side of the check valve, but not won't go past that. So that can help avoid problems. It's also good for your pump because it avoids back pressure on the pump if your airstone gets clogged or something like that, and that can destroy pumps.
All right. Number three, stability.
Yeah. You have to make sure that a tank is extremely stable. With a really small desktop aquarium, it's easy to put it on a desk. It's not a problem if it's 3 gallons. You know, most desks can handle that. And up to about 10 gallons, any nice, stable piece of well-constructed level furniture that's suitably water-resistant, countertop, can usually be fairly appropriate up to about 10 gallons. But past that, you really need a stand that's constructed for aquariums.
And this is because water weighs how much?
About 8.5 pounds per gallon. And with gravel and so on in a tank, the average might be closer to 10 pounds per gallon for the whole setup, along with the glass and whatnot. So it's very heavy.
It's pretty heavy.
You get a 55-gallon aquarium, and I mean, wow.
If you're talking
450 pounds
yeah.
or something like that, it's pretty heavy. So you need to have either a stand that's just sold for use in aquariums or built by someone who really knows what they're doing. And it should be on a level floor. And you should also think about the floor. If your tank is much bigger than 55 gallons, you should think twice before putting it upstairs unless you know how the floor is constructed. Because, you know, you get a 200-gallon tank.
If it weighs 10 pounds a gallon.
Yeah, you've got a really...
That's a heavy piece there.
Yeah, and if you have a tank that's bigger
like,
than that...
what, an elephant in your room.
It gets really, really heavy, and flooring can be an issue. Even if it doesn't end up taking an impromptu trip down to the first floor of your house, it could still cause structural damage,
stress.
You know, structural stress and so on. So that's something to be considered. So just make sure you know your flooring, you know that what kind of support is under where the tank is and so on. But we have our 55-gallon here in the basement. It's not a problem. That's safe. But just be aware of that. A tank that is put on something that's not really holding it up can be a danger to humans, to pets, to the fish themselves, and so
on. You mean a stand?
Yeah, if it's...
A stand that's not constructed
right,
to hold up a fish tank.
Right, a stand that's not constructed well enough can be a danger to all those things. And it can also just... it'd be a big mess, too, if you lost
Oy.
It. And it can also crack the tank. I remember
if it's
once,
not level?
If it's not level, or if it's not well constructed, or if it's something that you put on a 10-gallon aquarium on something that's not actually intended to hold that much weight. I did that once as a kid, and I got a stress crack, right? Just the tank buckled right through the middle and leaked all over
wow.
the place. Because
I bet your mom was happy, huh?
Yeah. Because I had set it on something that wasn't intended to handle the weight. So that's an important thing to worry about.
Okay, tell us number four.
Number four, I guess I touched on this somewhat, the plugged filter. But it can be the media, like I said before. Make sure that the water's running out of the waterfall portion of the filter, not right above the intake tube. But also, sometimes it can be plugged to the point where it's going through the intake tube and going out the waterfall, but just at a much reduced quantity. It's really important to take a bottle brush type maintenance tool and clean out that tube because it might be full of gunk and slowed down and you're not really noticing. So every month or so, depending on your bio load in the tank and various other issues, go through with one of those bottle brushes. Not one. They make them specifically for aquariums, and that's the kind I'd recommend. and go through those tubes. Also look around the impeller and see if there are any hairs that get caught around it or any gunk that's impeding the flow there. And the entrance from the intake tube that goes actually into the filter box, clean that out. Toothpicks, pipe cleaners, and so on can be of use there. And that will help avoid issues with plugged filters that gradually reduce the flow until so you don't even notice that it's happening, but they can really impact the health of your aquarium.
Okay, number five is something that we've talked about before.
Yeah.
But it always bears a little bit of repetition, especially if there are beginners around.
Indeed.
So, ammonia and nitrite spikes.
Okay. A few things to worry about with ammonia and nitrite spikes. Especially when you're starting out and your tank is cycling, test often. I'm going to repeat that. Test often, often, often. Very important. Make sure that you know what's going on in your aquarium. As you become more experienced, you may be able to notice things from signs the fish are giving and so on, but it doesn't hurt to test even then. Some ways to avoid ammonia and nitrite spikes that will damage your livestock in your aquarium are fishless cycles. We've talked about that before, but basically using either pure ammonia or fish food to cycle a tank completely before you add fish, and so ammonia and nitrite spikes are less likely, and when they do occur, are less likely to be as high, and so as threatening or dangerous. Keeping your bio load fairly low is good. Don't try to max out the capacity of your tank. Just, you know, stock it fairly lightly. And then if you keep a lot of healthy growing plants in there, even if they're just simple ones like Java moss, you're going to reduce the likelihood and severity of ammonia and nitrite spikes. And if you have enough plants in there that are growing very healthily, you won't have ammonia or nitrite spikes if you have a reasonable bioload, because the plants will absorb all the ammonium before it's even a problem.
Alrighty, number six. Tell us number six.
Number six is a sad one. Dead livestock. This can often take people by surprise, so check the numbers in your tank. If you know all your fish by name, this will be fairly easy. Just make sure you know where everybody is. If you have a bigger tank...
With a school of something,
you have, you know, 50 fish in a tank or something, all of the same kind, then you may not be able to do that very effectively, but you can at least look around and see if you see any dead individuals. Looking behind and under ornaments or plants, anywhere where a fish carcass could be caught, up against the filter tube, you know, behind a heater, those sorts of places, because that's a really nice way to cause an ammonia or nitrite spike, mean way, not a nice way, I guess I should say. I was being
an effective way.
Yes, and that can be a big problem. Now, if you have really low bio load and you have very healthy growing plants, once again, this could be less of an issue, but it still can be an issue. I remember once I had a female bristlenose placo, not very big, in a 10-gallon tank with some celestial pearl danios, went on vacation. She apparently passed away while we were on vacation. The person who was taking care of our fish didn't notice, and when I came back, I found all the fish healthy except for that one. I found the few, you know, bits of her armor left over.
Had they just eaten her?
That had been, I'm not sure if the fish ate her or, you know, that may have happened partially. It may have been some decomposition going on. But because the tank was a CO2 injected, medium to high light, low bio load, very high plant, mass, the biomass of plants was really high in the tank.
It was able to handle it.
All the fish, besides that one, survived just fine, didn't even get sick. So, it happens, but it's not a good idea, and just avoid it by, you know, making sure you check things out. Looking for dead fish, and of course, remove dead fish you find immediately. Alright. Let's go on to the next one. Where are we?
Number seven.
Number seven.
Overfeeding.
Well, I guess everybody knows this one, overfeeding. But what do you do if, you know, a neighbor, a friend, a nephew, a niece, a child, son, daughter, whoever.
Grandchild. Malicious cat.
Somebody just overfeeds your fish ridiculously. Or dump some kind of toxin into the tank. Box of graham crackers, yes. Like I did when I was 4 at my cousin's house. That was terrible. My cousin and I dumped a whole box of graham crackers in for the goldfish.
They wanted to feed the fish, and they thought, you know, they're 4, so they think, we like graham crackers. I bet the fish like graham crackers, too.
Yeah, we started out with a little teeny crumble of graham crackers, and the fish liked it. They were goldfish. They loved the graham crackers, so we said, a little is good, more is better. It didn't work out that way. But this is what you can do when things like that happen. You immediately change water with a gravel washer, like a python, something like that. Get out as much as you can. That helps a lot. Add some, you know, ammonia-reducing substance, and then after a reasonable amount of time has changed, depending on how much of the offending material might be left, do another water change. You have to be careful. You don't want to cause outgassing. But if, you know, you do a 20, 30, even 40% water change the first time, if you have to get as much of it as you can out, and if there's significant amount remaining, then after a few hours do it again. And maybe even depending on the severity of it, you might even have to do more. It's better for fish to deal with outgassing than massive, you know, amounts of pollutants. So those were are the two measures that I'd recommend in that case. And I've done it successfully a couple of times. Had kids, whether siblings or, you know, children of my own or whatever, massively overfeed something, and just doing some fairly massive water changes with gravel washing included was able to diffuse the situation.
Okay. What's next? Number 8, incompatibility.
Okay. Well, here I would just mention two things. Direct aggression, where you have one fish actually violently attacking another one, picking at its fins, and so on. The best thing to do to avoid it is do your homework before introducing fish, and to include a lot of landscaping so that fish have territorial visual barriers like plants and decorations and so on, so that they can be in their own little area and not see the other fish necessarily while they're in the same tank.
They want some privacy.
Yeah, that tends to help with that. But also make sure that you're not mixing incompatible species or incompatible members of the same species, because, you know, you put Jack Dempsey's together in a tank, or, you know, lots of cichlids have some issues with that. You can't put enough hiding places in a 10-gallon tank for, you know, mbunas, you know, the cichlids from Lake Malawi. They, when they're adults at least, they will not get along in that tank, and it's too small for more than one anyway. So there are lots of fish you just can't keep together. Then there's some indirect competition that we've touched on before, like over-competition for food. Watch for that. When you put food in, make sure that all the fish are getting some of it. Otherwise, you could have fish that are starving to death. So,
which would not be fun.
Yeah, which, once again, make sure you do your homework. Don't mix incompatible types of goldfish, for example, like a shubunkin, which is a single-tailed goldfish that swims pretty efficiently, with a water bubble eye, which hobbles around and can barely see.
Sad creatures.
So there you go.
Okay, number 9 is diseases.
Such as the dreaded ick. Okay, well, the first thing to do is quarantine. And of course, some people, when you start out, you don't have a quarantine tank, but I'd still recommend it. If you're going to be introducing fish at multiple times, which in a new tank you usually are, you don't always need it, but it's a good idea to just have a quarantine tank set up. And that can help you avoid such diseases. And keep some medication on hand in case you do see ick. Of course, everyone knows, if you've listened to the show for a long time, that my favorite way to treat ick is just merely increase the temperature and watch the fish carefully and treat them well and feed them well, and they usually get over it with the higher temperature that it interferes with the reproduction of the ick parasite. But you may need to medicate as well.
Okay, last one, and that is jumpers.
Yes, fish can and do jump depending on the species, and individuals can vary in their propensity to jump widely. Some are just crazy. I had a bally shark. I just bought it, and for no reason at all, just in the middle of nothing, hadn't been frightened or anything, shot up towards the top of the tank, hit its head on the cover glass, and died.
Oh, how sad.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. I was right there, but I wasn't doing anything. I was just watching the tank, and it just shot up. Wham! Killed itself.
Dang.
That's not common, but other things like that can happen. If you have a little teeny crack, just where the heater is in the back of the tank, where that little plastic insert in the lid is, if there's a teeny little gap, some fish will find that gap and shoot out of it. So you need to be really careful. So research.
You can just
hear them
shouting as they jump out, freedom.
Yeah, but it doesn't last.
It doesn't
very
last
long.
Very long. Yeah.
I've had all kinds of fish, meaning not a huge excessive number of fish, but several different varieties of fish that have jumped. I've had bettas do it. I had a red-tailed shark do it when I was a kid. I've had, let's see, what else did I had a goldfish, a beautiful Shubunkin goldfish that leapt out of the tank. Here is the good news. Well, make sure you cover all the gaps, you know. You can use a lot of things. A lot of times if it's a visual barrier, they won't try to jump through it. So you can cover it even with something that's not attached to the tank, a piece of plastic or something like that. If they can't see a gap, they won't necessarily jump out of it in a lot of cases. It depends on the fish. Some will. Some will nose their way out of the tank if they can. But if the fish jumps, the fish may even be a little crispy and still be able to be revived. That sounds weird, I know, but if it's been completely dried out, of course it's dead. But I have had fish that were stiff and mostly dry on the outside. When I put them in the tank and walk them, where you take the fish and you sort of hold it and push it through the water so some of the water goes through the gills, I've had fish revive.
It's and fish CPR.
Yeah, it is kind of fish CPR.
Fish rescue breathing.
Some of them, I mean, will die later of secondary infection, but that Shubunkin goldfish I mentioned that jumped out, it was at my office, and I had a tank there, and he jumped out. I came in, he was there on the floor, looked dry, and not completely, you know, crispy, but pretty dry, not wet to the touch on the side that was facing the air. The side facing the floor is a little damp still. Put him in the water, started walking him back and forth as I just gently held him between my thumb and forefinger, and just sort of as if he were a toy car that I was, you know, playing with, and did that through the tank. After a while, he started breathing again.
Wow.
And he survived for several days when he succumbed to an infection on the side of his body where he had been
rubbed by the carpet.
He probably flopped around for a while, and it just rubbed him too deeply, and he got some sort of infection.
Poor guy.
So he died from that, but it doesn't always happen that way. You can sometimes revive a fish successfully.